a common sign of perfectionism, unrealistic expectations coupled with this overly critical.
Yes.
Overly critical of ourselves.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential.
Judy Dang is the founder of Avid at Work, a coaching service that helps individuals and organizations get productive and organized. She created the Goal Getter Formula, a five-step process to achieve your goals. She is currently authoring Perfect Enough, How to Be Happier and More Productive by Letting Go of Perfectionism, due in September 2022. Her writing has appeared in Forbes, Wired, and Next Concept HR magazine. I'm here with Judy Dang. You are an action strategist who helps entrepreneurs focus on their priorities so they can turn their ideas into action. Oh my goodness, isn't that... I have a friend who has so many ideas. I mean, that's his strength, because yes, he took that Clifton Strengths assessment, and his number one is ideation. Mm-hmm. And but it's one thing to have the ideas, and then the other thing to actually act on them.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. And some people are stronger in one than the other.
Right. Yes.
Some people are great with execution. Mm-hmm. Fantastic with making the list and schedules and deadlines, for sure. So your friend perhaps could use a partner who's really good at execution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he talks about that too. Yeah, that's the... So I know that you're also writing a book on, or you recently wrote a book on perfectionism, particularly with Asian American women. I want to know, how did you even become interested in this area of perfectionism? Where did that start for you?
Well, actually, I'm in the process of writing it. It's coming out in September 2022.
Okay.
Oh, so it's coming out. How did it get started was actually started with getting a little depressed in my business last April. Mm-hmm. I hadn't met my revenue goals. I was surrounded by friends who were super successful. I love them. I support them. But then there was some comparison. Like, am I not cut out for this business thing? What am I doing wrong? You know, there was a lot of self-criticism, judgment. Mm-hmm. The other motivator for the book was that my nephew was born last year, in January. Mm-hmm. And I saw how his grandmother taught him and took care of him and the things she said to him. And I realized, I grew up, I got to see socialization happening right then. Like, how does a child learn, like, don't make mistakes, don't be messy. And I saw, that's how I was raised. Whoa. And so those three things, having a depressive episode, and seeing my mom and my aunt raise this baby, I was like, whoa, that's where. And then it got to a point where, like, I need to find out what this thing is, because I had gone through lots of therapy. I thought I had finished with perfectionism, but I hadn't. I said, I'm going to find out what the hell this thing is. I'm going to get to the bottom of this thing for myself. So that's how the book idea started. Frustration, anger,
and observation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, you know, I think that I'm glad you shared that, because I've noticed, even with myself, because I think I grew up as a little perfectionist, and it was
for me, I felt I always had to live up to this ideal of what the adults around me wanted me to be. Because I grew up in a small Baptist church, and I was like the model child, like literally. I can remember one parent saying, and I was maybe, I was maybe 13 or 12. And she said, and I tell my daughter, why can't you be more like Ebony? And so, you know, the other girls hated me, right? But it was always that pressure from the adults to be who they wanted me to be. And I never really felt free to be my actual self, like express my actual opinions and do things I really wanted to do. So
you got that early too. Like, you were raised with that message, like, I need to meet those others' expectations.
Yes. And then when I felt like I wasn't meeting their expectations, I felt like a complete failure.
Yes, exactly. Yes, that's the common sign of perfectionism. Unrealistic expectations coupled with this overly critical.
Yes.
Overly critical of ourselves.
And you know what? That overcriticalness turned into self-hatred for me.
Yeah. I can see that. I'm sorry to hear that, Ebony.
Yeah. Well, I'm better now. Thank goodness. Yeah. But you know, but this is why I feel like this topic is very important, because I feel, especially for writers, that there is an element of, I have to write the perfect article, book, whatever, blog post. And they're always comparing themselves, because you mentioned comparison. We're always comparing ourselves to, or we're comparing our work to published works that have been through like many edits.
Exactly. Comparing our like photos to someone who's in a front of a magazine who's had, you know, 5 hours of styling, right?
Yes, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Writers totally. The comparison, like comparing our chapter one with someone else's chapter 30.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Or even if you're like an entrepreneur starting a business, you're comparing your success or your progress so far to someone else who's probably been in the business longer than you. Or perhaps if you're at the same like time level, you don't really know all that they had to go through before they even got to this point. Do you
know what I mean? Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We don't know what happens inside for the other person.
Yeah. So as you're writing this book on perfectionism, so what are you learning?
I'm focusing my book on Asian American women specific about the culture, the experiences that I've experienced and my friends. So that's the lens I'm looking through. Focusing on Asian American women. And other cultures have parental expectations. You had, I hear from my Jewish friends, Jewish moms have humongous expectations. So parental expectations, I've learned, it's common. Like it's a common phenomenon, but in Asian cultures, there's an additional layer that gets added on, like an additional layer of, I represent not just my immediate family, but my village, my clan, my people. That expectation it comes out with, I need to do well because other people are counting on me and I represent my village. Another one is, hierarchy, authority, obedience, especially for women who are socialized, you know, Asian women are socialized to basically, they're a second class citizen. You know, historically, you know, boys get educated before girls. And that's not common to just Asian cultures, but added on the pressure of what it means to be an Asian woman, like the pressure to be quiet and submissive and obedient and demure, right? All of those contribute to perfectionism, because there's this ideal that if I'm not the perfect Asian girl or woman, it reflects on my family.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Are those expectations placed on, is that specific to Asian American women, or is that Asian women and like who don't, is that, so if I went to Asia somewhere, like Japan, let's just say, are those expectations the same than if I were a Japanese American living in America?
The foundation is the same.
Uh-huh.
Like if a culture has a Confucius philosophy, you know, as the background, like China, Japan, Korea, Vietnam, that influence from Confucius, they all have the same foundation. And then added on, when somebody comes to America, they get this confusing bicultural, like, I'm supposed to be outspoken in college, you know, we get points for participation, but that conflicts with my Asian upbringing of being quiet and obedient.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So there's often conflicts, but they also often merge into the same thing. But the conflicts are when it's confusing. Like I'm supposed to, you know, in American culture, brag about myself and talk about my accomplishments and share my wins. But at home, we don't do that. We actually do the opposite.
Okay. Now, is that women or men or both?
Some of it is both. And then the not bragging about yourself is both men and women.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of mixing of like culture, ethnicity, race, how many years one has been in America, social economic status. It's all a big puzzle that I'm finding in my book.
Yeah. And so when you're working with entrepreneurs to help them take action on their ideas, do you find that a lot of them are perfectionists?
Yes. When they come to me, the first problem they usually say is, I'm overwhelmed with too much to do. I don't have time. Help me with, you know, a schedule. Help me with finding more time, making me more efficient. Like, I don't want to be even more efficient than I am. Then we uncover, unwrap the onion, and it turns out they don't know how to say no. They have a hard time saying no. That's why they're inundated.
Yeah.
Or the perfectionism is, I need to do everything like at A+ level. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm exhausted, because everything has to be at an A+ level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for an entrepreneur, that's just not sustainable.
Right. Yeah.
It's just not.
Yeah.
I can't spend and devote A+ effort on everything.
Mm-hmm.
No, that just won't work.
I was listening to an audiobook about entrepreneurship. It was written by an African-American woman, and I can't remember her name, but she talked about how it's important to have people help you. Like, and she said, like, in the beginning, even if you only have $200 a month to budget to get someone to help you do whatever, even if it means hiring someone to help do your laundry so that you can spend more time working on your business or making phone calls for you or whatever, it's well worth the investment, because you will just exhaust yourself. And then we haven't even started to talk about the physical ailments or the physical, physical consequences of the stress caused by perfectionism.
Absolutely. We haven't touched on the physical. Yeah. The burnout, basically.
Yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, it can really be a matter of life or death. I mean, that's extreme, but it can be if you continue to live in this state of, oh my gosh, I have to get, like, you're always in that fight and flight mode. I have to do this. I have to do this. Mm-hmm. It can really wear and tear on you.
Yes, absolutely. I do agree with let you mention about the author of as soon as you can, you know, and when you start a business in the beginning, you have to do a lot of things on your own. Mm-hmm. If you're bootstrapping, using your own savings, yeah, that makes sense. But as soon as you can, get to the point of delegating.
Yes. Yeah.
As soon as you can. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's going to be a period of doing it all on your own, but quickly get a VA, mm-hmm. A bookkeeper, mm-hmm. for sure. You don't want to be good at bookkeeping.
Mm-hmm. Right. Not, yeah.
No, that's not why I went into business, you know, mm-hmm. to be good at marketing and bookkeeping.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think when we start businesses, we really think of all the little parts that play into the bigger picture, but there are these little, yeah.
In my work week, mm-hmm. let's say I work 40 hours, I would say I spend 25% of it with clients and the rest is on the business.
Wow.
25% really doing the thing I love. And the rest of 75% is running the business.
Mm-hmm. So is it that 25% that keeps you going?
Yes. And my work is, how do I flip that percentage, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do I build a business where it's the opposite?
And so how is... you have your own business where you're helping entrepreneurs. How is perfectionism affecting you in your business? How are you managing that?
Well, in the beginning, I heard, video is a good way to market my business. I should do video. So mm-hmm. I said, okay, I'm going to do that. Mm-hmm. And I started doing videos. I looked at examples of videos. And who was my example? Marie Forleo.
Oh,
Marie Forleo.
Yes.
And okay. I got the idea, like, I need to do just as well as Marie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I got the setup and I wrote my script. And I, every time I shot a video, I had to make my hair look good, and put on makeup, and be clever like Marie. And it took me 20 hours to do one 2-minute video.
No. Okay, so
20 hours, and I thought, this is not sustainable.
Yes,
it's not gonna work. The math is just not gonna work. Uh-huh. And so I said that it has to change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was the perfectionism. Like, I had this idea that that's how it needed to look. Mm-hmm. And this is like my first few videos where nobody watched, you know, nobody watched.
Mm-hmm. But you know what, in the beginning, Judy, no one, I mean, you don't get a lot of views in the beginning, yeah, right?
Absolutely.
That's another thing I think people don't really think about is that it takes time to build an audience, and it takes time to practice and get good at what you're doing. Like, we just don't come out of the box ready made. This this is something that takes years of practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I had unrealistic expectations,
mm-hmm.
and a fear of what others thought.
Like, yes.
Oh God, I better make the perfect video or my friends and colleagues are going to think I'm lame.
Yeah. All those thoughts about what other people are thinking can be so, but you know, I read, there's this author, Katie Byron, if you've heard of her, but she wrote this book called I can't think of the name of the book, but her philosophy or theory is that what other people are thinking is none of your business.
Mm-hmm.
Your own thoughts, that's your business. And when you leave yourself, your own head, to try and get into someone else's head, and you can never know 100% what someone else is thinking anyways, you're usually just making up a story about what you think that they're thinking. But when you leave your own self to try and get into someone else's head, it's like you're abandoning yourself.
Yes,
right? Exactly. I learned that. I read that book in my late 20s, and it's just stuck with me ever since. Like, whenever I find myself concerned about what other people are thinking, I always stop and say, that's none of your business. Mm-hmm. Because they have enough issues with their own thoughts anyways, right?
Yeah. And the thing is, they're not thinking of us as much as we think they are, right?
Yeah.
Because we're all so self-centered.
Mm-hmm.
We're only thinking about ourselves anyways.
Right. Yeah.
So I know. Yeah. But what are they thinking is a very common sign of perfectionism. This, because I think it comes from the, young childhood experience of needing approval from others.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because when we're babies, we're attached to our caregivers and their approval is super important and needed because we depend on them.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
For food and shelter. But when we grow up and still have that, it's debilitating.
Well, I think school has a lot to do with it too.
Oh yeah.
Right, education, if you go through like a formal schooling, maybe homeschooling too, I don't know. But I know, if you go through, in the United States, you go through school here, there is always the pressure, you're always being compared with other students, and you basically are like a number, kindergarten through high school. You're either like a 90%, you're an 80%, you're a 60%, right? And we live all these years being nothing but numbers, and it becomes so just debilitating.
Ranked, sorted, categorized. Yes. Are you in the honors program or are you in the regular?
Exactly.
In class. So as a teacher, how does it work for you with grades and
So I just recently that's a great, perfect question, because a few months ago, I started bringing mindfulness into the classroom because there was an issue. The kids have been gone from the classroom for like a year and a half, almost 2 years they had been gone before we brought them back for in-person classes this year, right? So they came back and it was just like chaos. I mean, there were all kinds of crazy things happening on campus. The kids were in class. They were completely checked out. I was talking to other teachers about this too, because I would talk and ask a question or whatever, and it would just be like deadpan silence, and they're just kind of staring at me. So they're like not even there. And so when you add on the pressures of what's happening with COVID, right, and all of that in their homes, and when you add on the grading on top of that, so we know that you have all these issues at home happening. Now you also have to worry about getting grades.
Mm-hmm.
It became a campus, almost like this campus disease of apathy on their part, where it was just like, I don't even care. I don't really want to be here. I don't care, whatever. So in order to try and alleviate that, we focus, at least in my class, we focused a lot on, first of all, just learning how to breathe and be in tune with our bodies. And I did some EFT, some emotional freedom tapping, to try and calm their nervous systems. So they would, before you take a test, before you start anything, we're going to breathe.
Oh.
We're going to do some tapping, right? And then we started doing a lot of journaling where we would write about how we felt about things and even start to discuss them. So it's really it's a process of teaching them how to be self-aware.
Mm-hmm.
We also went over their values too. I did that lesson with them also. Like, what are your values? Like, what's important to you? Let's figure that out. So you're teaching them how to be self-aware, and then you're creating this safe space where they can share their opinions, share what they're feeling, right? And that just helps to clear the playing field a bit.
Okay. Yeah. Got it. And how does grading happen in your classroom? Do you grade A, B, C, D?
There is that, the regular scale, the A, B, C, D, right? But if I'm grading papers, I don't, like essays, I don't write a whole bunch of comments at all. I read it. I look for one important thing. So let's say I'm looking to see if you can write a thesis statement. Okay. And so if I'm going to comment on your paper, I'm just going to comment on the thesis statement. I'm not going to comment on how you didn't spell this correctly or how you didn't put the period here or whatever, though. Right. Yes. Yeah. And I don't grade, there's no more red ink, because I think that can be quite scary for kids. So there are little things you could do, even sometimes adjusting the grading scale. Instead of an F being 0%, I usually set my F at 40%.
Mm-hmm.
And it's if you think about it, and actually during COVID, I set the minimum to 50%. And so that helps a lot because if you have a 0% and you're trying to get up to a 70% to pass the class, that's a huge, that's a huge barrier. Yeah. But if you set it at 40 or 50 or even 60, you start them off at 60%. Uh-huh. It just makes it takes off a lot of the pressure.
Yeah. Ooh, cool.
Yeah. So
I want to hear about your writing. What is your writing practice look like?
My writing practice is not as consistent as I would like it to be, but I do keep I've kept a journal since I was in fifth grade. I still have my fifth grade journal. Right. I actually have a diary that my father bought me when I was 11, and I have an entry in that diary from starting from around 1990 something to when I was 30 something.
Wow.
Yeah. So my writing practice is if I'm feeling particularly stressed or angry, I always take to writing and during those times, because that just helps me to get out my feelings in a healthier way than like yelling at someone or throwing something across the room or whatever. Right. If I'm trying to write something for like professional purposes or when I was in grad school, I mean, that was like an everyday practice where I would find something to write every day to just kind of keep up the momentum, right? But for when I'm not in that mode, I'm usually writing therapeutically as needed. Yeah.
And you have a website, right?
Yes.
Do you write for your website, a blog?
I do. I don't write as much as I would like to for that. And so because there's that balance of teaching and then time to write, right? But I do. I write for my blog.
Yeah.
When I can. Yeah. Yeah. So now let's get back to you, because how do you organize your writing time when you're writing this book on perfectionism?
Yeah. In the beginning was ugly. I thought, okay, let me try something. Can I do 7 to 8 in the morning every day?
Mm-hmm.
Let me give that a go. I heard, you know, doing something every day. I tried that. Some days I'd wake up late. Some days I'd have calls during that time. I was just not motivated. Mm-hmm. It just didn't work for me, that small chunk every day. So I tried something else.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, let's carve out Wednesdays, like all day Wednesday, I'm going to just have a 4-day work week.
Mm-hmm.
And Wednesdays as my writing day. And that has worked a lot better to have a big chunk.
Okay. So you have a particular day that you focus on, right?
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah.
And
it works a lot better.
Okay. And how does, so if you have one particular, you have your Wednesday that you do your writing. Does that also entail the research?
No.
Okay.
No, research is in the evenings after work or on the weekends. Wednesday's just for writing. Oh, because I love to hoover up knowledge. I'm like, I love to research. I'm just so, that's one of my temperaments. Like I can just read all day and go down rabbit holes all day.
Yeah.
And I'm in this writing course for the book, and the instructor said, if you're reading other people's stuff, you're not writing your own stuff.
Yes, I was just going to say that. I was actually writing that down because I've noticed that with myself. If I want to start a project, so let's say I want to write on a particular topic or I want to start whatever, I will do so much research that I never get started.
Exactly.
And I think that's part of the perfectionism too. It's this, you know what I think it is really? I think that it is a fear of getting started. So I'm deliberately
procrastinating
because I'm scared to get started. Number one, because I'm scared of failing.
Yeah.
And then number two, there's this aspect of, okay, once I do get started, I have to be perfect at it. I want this to be very good. So I'm going to do all this research and
you just
never get anywhere.
Exactly. You nailed it. Yep.
Yeah.
You nailed it. You nailed it. Exactly. It's the fear of what am I going to write? It has to be good. So if I don't want to feel that feeling, so I'm going to do a lot of research, or I'm going to do some laundry, or I'm going to go and run the dishwasher.
Yeah.
To avoid that feeling.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I totally get it.
And I think that's a good point you brought up, because I was reading another book. A psychologist wrote this book. I think he was a psychologist. I can't think. But he said that we don't necessarily, it's not that we're scared to do what it is that we need to do, right? So I need to write this book, and I'm not going to start because I'm scared of actually writing the book. It's we're scared of the feelings that we're going to feel when we start to do it, right? So I don't want to feel like a failure when I start to write this book. So I'm just going to keep putting it off, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a way to manage our emotions.
Yeah.
Procrastination. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or emotion management.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's when, just from coming from an energy healer's perspective, because I study energy healing, and that's what I do with the energy tapping with my students, is you have to, just to get in tune with the emotions that you're feeling in your body, right? So if you're feeling nervousness before you take this test or you do this assignment, where do you feel that? Do you feel that in the chest area? Do you feel that in your back? Do you feel that in your legs? Right? Do you feel that in your head? Like we can pinpoint where the feeling is, and then really just start to focus on that particular part of our body. It will, after about 90 seconds of just kind of feeling it with all of its intensity. So if it's in your head, you feel it with all of its intensity in your body. In about 90 seconds, it starts to dissipate.
Wow.
And it doesn't mean that's not going to come back, because in 5 minutes it may come back, but then you just focus on it again. But it's that getting used to the feeling, because if you can get used to the feeling and know how to match the feeling, then you're not going to be so scared to actually step into what it is you need to do to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Because when you can experience those feelings and they pass, then they don't overwhelm you.
It frees you up, right? Yeah, because now you have more energy. Now that you've dissipated that frenetic energy, now you have more energy to actually take action.
Nice. Yeah. I wish I would have had that in school before exams. Nice.
Yeah, what? I actually had, so this is related to my tooth issue. And I don't think I talked about this in the series, but I had, so this was around Christmas, and I wrote a letter to my mother for Christmas, like a love letter from daughter to mother. And she loved the letter, and she started crying because she was just like, oh my gosh, I've always wanted to hear this from you. This is wonderful. And then she brought up something that was hard to hear, but she said, you know, she said, I felt that at some point you hated me, like when you were a kid, basically like a teenager, into my early 20s. And I thought about it, because I never hated my mother. I don't know. I think only sociopaths hate their parents. I don't know if anyone really hates their parents, right?
Yeah.
But, so I realized that there had been issues in my childhood that I just never felt I could express. And it had to do with shame. I had toxic shame because of something that happened in my childhood, and I never really felt I could talk about it. And so I held on to this shame. It turned into self-hatred. And then the people around me experienced my own self-hatred as hatred toward them.
Whoa.
Right? Because I was emotionally closed off. I would retort with like mean comments or just an attitude. Yeah. I never even said like, I hate you. And those words never came out of my mouth. It was all in my attitude, right?
Yeah.
So I realized, and this is after I got home after my mother had read the letter and blah, blah, blah. And I was thinking about this. And I realized that I needed to have a conversation with my mother about this.
Ooh.
To kind of clear the air.
Yeah.
And I knew intuitively that if I had this conversation, it would help with the healing of the pain I felt in my mouth.
Whoa.
Because I knew that the pain in my mouth had a lot to do with me needing to have this conversation. I know this sounds really strange, but it did.
It's the speaking part of your body, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I had the conversation with my mother, and I kid you not, like that same day, the pain reduced significantly. Whoa. He was, yes, because here's why. Because after I had that conversation, all that energy that was caught up in here was released. Like all the stress I was feeling, I released it. So now I have more energy to heal.
Amazing, Ebony. Yeah. What a story. That's powerful. Mm-hmm. Super. Whoa. So, after you cleared the air with your mom, physically your body was released.
Yes.
That tension.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's
awesome. But that's what I feel like it's that way with everyone. I mean, there's usually a spiritual issue behind a physical ailment. There's usually a spiritual issue behind it. And I don't mean like spiritual as in a religious. I mean spiritual as in there's something emotionally or something that has to do with the relationship with yourself and then how you're relating to someone else that needs some healing.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. Our bodies are giving us a signal.
Yes.
That something needs attention. Right?
Yes.
Something needs attention.
Mm-hmm.
Truly. Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, fun.
There's so much to learn about yourself when you start to really tune into what's happening, right? So now let's get back to perfection. I mean, we didn't really get off track with perfectionism, but now that we know the some of the physical consequences that can happen because of perfectionism, we know the emotional consequences that can happen because of perfectionism. What tips do you have for people who might find themselves suffering from perfectionism? Like, what can we start to do to overcome? Perfectionism be overcome?
I would say managed, reduced. Managed. I wouldn't say eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
First thing is, because it's rooted in that fear of not good enough.
Yeah.
That's where it's rooted. I would address that. I address that first.
Yes.
With self-compassion, affirmation that mm-hmm. I'm more than enough.
Mm-hmm.
Having these messages to myself. My husband is very tall, and we were walking down the sidewalk one day together, hand in hand. And whenever someone approached us, you know, I would like step to the side and go into the street. And then several times this occurred, and my husband said, "You know, you don't have to do that all the time. You belong on the sidewalk as much as anyone else."
Uh-huh.
Mm. And I used that message for myself. Okay, I belong on the sidewalk as everyone else does.
Yeah. Okay, so that really ties into that feeling of not being worthy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And everyone belongs on the sidewalk. I have my place on the sidewalk. I belong on the sidewalk like everyone right. else. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. how I start the belonging on the sidewalk reminder for myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That self-compassion, that's
mm-hmm. key. Starting there, yeah, because it's rooted in that feeling of not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I really like that you mentioned the self-affirmation or the self, how do you say, mm-hmm. affirmations. I think that's a really helpful and important point because it helps to refute all of the crazy talk in our heads, you know, the crazy talk that says you're not good enough, you're too slow, you're too stupid, you're too whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what I would do, Judy, is I need to do it this year. I usually do this at the beginning of every year, but I would record affirmations for the year. Like I would think about the goals I want to accomplish, and then I would speak them into a recorder or my phone.
Yep.
And then every morning when I wake up, I play them
mm-hmm.
and hear them. And sometimes on my way to work, I would just keep playing them on repeat.
Absolutely. Yes. That's a very powerful way to get it into your subconscious, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A prompt, if someone wants to try that, a prompt could be recording it into your phone or even journaling. The critical voices say, right? What I know is true is, fill that in, those two columns for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it takes you out of the the frame of mind of I'm thinking those things about myself, right?
Yeah.
By distancing myself from those critical voices and to name them. Okay, the voices say this.
Mm-hmm.
What I know is true is this.
Yeah.
That could be a great way to journal or record as well and listen.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful idea. And I think a psychotherapist once told me that we have within us, we have like these different characters. Like you have the writer part of you, you have the frightened part of you that's always like worried about every little thing that could go wrong. You have like the more authoritative part that's like, what do you think you're doing? Or critical. And so if you learn to recognize them and name them, especially the ones that, like you mentioned, the ones that are like super critical and give it a name, and then understand that it really all those different aspects of the personality are trying to protect you from being hurt.
Exactly.
So you start to have some compassion, and you just say, okay, I'm gonna. What do you have to say? Okay, thank you for sharing. I'm gonna move on. Right?
Exactly. Because what I know is true is this.
Yes.
The adult me, not that child.
Yes.
That wanted to seek approval or please others. Yeah. Yeah, the critical voices or the judge or whatever says this, but what I know is true is this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a wonderful exercise. Yeah, Judy, we are out of time. Can you believe it?
It's so fun, Ebony. Oh my
God. Tell us where we can find you.
Yes, my website is avidatwork.com. Mm-hmm. It's AVID. AWORK.com.
Mm-hmm. Good. So that's if we want to learn more about you and your work and all that you do, we're going to visit avidatwork.com.
Yes.
Wonderful. Do you have any last words of encouragement for people who are perfectionists and feel kind of stuck?
Stuck. Yes. Dare to be average. Go for average. Go for average. Instead of that pie in the sky, like, oh, it needs to be this big thing. Go for average.
That's actually, I like that. Yeah, because we're so busy trying to be above and beyond.
Yes.
Right, just kind of take it down a notch and just try being...
Yeah, just be human, Meg.
Yeah, be human.
Yeah, let's just be human.
Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you so much, Judy. This was great.
So fun. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I'm going to stop recording and just chat with you for a moment.
So many writers and entrepreneurs struggle with perfectionism because we are always comparing ourselves to other writers and other entrepreneurs. So I am very excited for Judy and her book and her services because I think this will help a lot of people to, as she says, manage their perfectionism. And once you manage your perfectionism, you're also managing your energy so that you are just going to be calmer and happier and frankly more productive once you have that managed. So please visit her website and learn more about her and her services, her coaching services, and her book. And in the meantime, you can visit zayzo.com and sign up for my newsletter. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Motivation to Ride. You can also follow me on Facebook at Motivation to Ride. Thank you so... Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm on Twitter at Ebony Haywood. You can follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Motivation to Ride. And I have a Facebook page, Motivation to Heal, which I'm more active on these days. So thank you so much for tuning in, and I look forward to a next time when I have another fabulous guest. Bye-bye.